roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Happy to be with you. Man, it's a huge week. We got fights tonight. And tomorrow night, and then the day after. And Saturdays is the watch-along, UFC 263. So in order, it's PFL 2021 Week 4 tonight. Lightweights and featherweights are in action. Man, the champs, they got their backs to the wall. Natan Schultz and Lance Palmer, both two-time champs, two-time millionaires. They find themselves in difficult spots because they lost their first fights. So they got to win and get some of them bonus points because only four out of the eight or 12 or 10 or whatever it is that remains in each respective division, only four qualify for the playoffs. They're not going to do eight, two fights in one night, resulting in two finalists. No. It's just going to be the semifinals and finals in December. So huge, huge implications. I'm sure you've all heard Anthony Pettis coveted free agent signing. He can't even go tonight due to illness, but he's been reassigned to PFL 2021 week six in a few weeks. So he'll have a chance to save his ass as well. He lost his first fight to Clay Collard. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We got Bellator 260, Douglas Lima defending his belt, his welterweight title. He's the number three welterweight in the USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings. So he's worked his way up because that's a tough division over at Bellator. So we've been able to use a little bit of the MMA math that people don't like to hear about, connecting the dots, quality wins, because they have quality fighters, established fighters. So he's worked his way up. He's tough, but he's got an undefeated Russian, Yaroslav Amosov, ahead of him, 25-0, 6-0 at Bellator. Never lost, never tasted defeat. So we'll see. He's got his hands full. That's tomorrow night. Aaron Pico, one of my favorites, also on the bill. That's Bellator 260. And then, of course, Saturday, UFC 263. We'll dive into that. All of the embeddeds have been dropping. I think number four is up next. I haven't caught it, but I did catch the first three. So we'll talk about that. If we have any time, squeeze in some tough talk. It's going to be a busy show because we also have Demetrius Johnson, the former UFC flyweight champion, former UFC bantamweight contender, current one championship flyweight contender, and he's also a former one championship flyweight Grand Prix winner. So those belts, those Grand Prix belts are nice. Can't leave those out. We'll talk to him at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time here on this live show. Thank you, as always, for joining us. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, June 10th. Gator, we got a lot to get to, man. You excited about PFL? You're very familiar with what I've been pumping out these past few weeks. It's going to be very similar to the final week of EPL. It's going to be very similar to NCAA to, conference tournaments, because sometimes, you know how like the sixth place team, if they win, they're automatically in, and it's squeezing out a really good team on the West Coast or vice versa that would normally get in, but because of some crazy upset that's going, it's affecting the 64 spots or 68 now to give away. So you know what I'm talking about, right? Every fight matters at PFL 2021 week four tonight.
Oh yeah, it's going to be exciting. Every fight matters, and the order in which they happen matter, because once people start filling out what's actually going on, the fighter right after them is going to have a different scenario. And the fighter after them is going to have another scenario. So it's really just going to get interesting on how these guys are going to approach these fights and who's going to really, if we're going to sit back and say, you know what, I've never seen this fighter fight like that before. They're obviously fighting like that because they know their back is against the wall.
I encourage you all to get on ESPN Plus tonight. Now I believe it's 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I say that because it was 6:30, 3:30, but they lost the fight. So, excuse me, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific is when the fights will start on ESPN Plus, and then they'll transfer over to ESPN 2 at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. So you all, if you're an MMA fan, if you're tuning into this channel, you have ESPN Plus, let's face it. Tune in and check it out, and I'm sure the PFL will do a good job of breaking down what needs to happen and what is happening and how things are being affected, because only Brendan Loughnane is safe in the featherweight division. From what I can tell, he got those 6 points, so the best someone can do is, if he were to lose tonight and just remain at six, the guys that have three could pass him. The guys that have zero could tie him. And then I'd have to see what the next tiebreaker is, because the only one I know is 6 points via win and a finish in the first round is it wins the tiebreaker over two decision wins. But we were talking to Randy Couture, and he says they have quite a few creative tiebreakers, and I was just hoping it wouldn't get to any of the others, but it might. And then in the lightweight division, you got like five guys with 3 points. And again, remember, two of the guys with 0 points in the featherweight and lightweight are the defending champions. I'm sure the PFL, and I'm sure they would like to feature them at least in the playoffs.
Yeah. I'm wondering what is there any effect, the fact that Anthony Pettis gets to wait a little bit longer before his fight? I mean, either way, I have to imagine those other fights would have played out by the time they got to him anyway, right? So it's probably going to end up being the same thing.
Well, let's just say by the time the night's over, you got four guys with 7 points. Anthony Pettis is just fighting for a paycheck on June 26th, I believe. I think that's what it breaks down to, or June 24th, I guess, in 2 weeks. I know they've been doing a little bit of a Thursday-Friday thing. But, yeah, I mean, that's the truth of it all, honestly. But if there's someone there with six, then I suppose he could tie him, and then I'll have to look up and see what that tiebreaker is. You know, if there's two guys with one win and a finish in the first round, it could even go down to the clock, dude, which, oof, that's one hell of a way to decide tiebreakers.
$1 million in the line.
I know. It's like, you know, in the NFL, how they have all these different tiebreakers. How did you do in your division? How did you do in the conference? Well, head-to-head first. But then if you get to number eight, it's almost like there's a guy in a referee shirt kind of going like this, and it's basically a coin flip. Now, yeah. I think the NFL did all those other ones so they didn't have to get to the coin flip, but there is a coin flip that can decide who goes to the playoffs. So, yeah, we'll have to dig into that. Hopefully it doesn't get to that, and hopefully there is an opportunity for him at least, you know, tie somebody. I mean, look, I guess I'm going to homer for the veteran. I honestly hope there's some three sevens and a five, and then that gives Pettis a chance. And to be fair, it'll give his opponent a chance too. But once it gets into the second, they can only tie. We're back to the tiebreaker. Once they get to the third, sayonara. The other guy can start popping champagne at home. It's kind of crazy, but like I say, it makes every fight meaningful. And, you know, it's a different twist than what Bellator and the UFC do. And I'm happy to cover it.
You got to figure out too, like what, there's the way that you cover it as a member of MMA media. There's a way you look at it as a fan, but then a lot of us like to put on the PFL hat and try and figure out what it is they're thinking in this scenario. Right. And in this scenario, you got Anthony Pettis, big free agent signing. And then you also have Fabricio Werdum, a big free agent signing, and neither one can fight right now. That has got to be horrifying for the PFL. No way around it.
Especially if they came over with a signing bonus. You know, the signing bonus has been pocketed. They didn't have to give them their win bonus. But then again, we don't know if the fighter negotiated straight pay. You know, a lot of these guys are getting like 25 and 25. 50 and 50 or whatever, as the season progresses. Pettis may have come in and said, look, I'll sign with you guys, bring you guys some clout. Give me 100 G's straight up, just to sign. And then I want to get it paid 100 grand per fight, regardless of the win. Like, I don't want a win bonus. I want 50 and 50 or nothing like that. Straight pay. In that regard, then, you know, Anthony Pettis hasn't lost much other than the chance to compete for $1 million, which he knew. He knew that, you know, he has to win them all to get the $1 million. But I think he had to believe I can at least get to the finals. Last I checked, the finalists get $200,000 each, and then the winner gets the other $800,000. So if you want to look at it that way, or the winner gets $1 million and the runner-up gets $200,000, that's fine. You can look at it that way too. But I'm going to definitely be tuning in from the first fight. I'll be tweeting. I'm going to get a kick out of this. I know I am. The next day, it's Bellator 260, and you got Douglas Lima, one of their best fighters ever over at Bellator, who has worked his way up the ranks to become a champ, to, you know, win a Grand Prix. Like, that guy's going to go down as a Bellator legend, and frankly, I mean, he's gonna go down as an MMA possible Hall of Famer, I imagine. You know, there's not technically an MMA. I mean, there is an MMA Hall of Fame. It's not talked about much, and I don't know if it's still in existence or not. But the only other Hall of Fame out there is UFC. If UFC were to buy Bellator, they would have to strongly consider Douglas Lima at some point. I'm not sure if he can get there, honestly, but they would have to consider him if they acquire these assets, which is what they've done, you know, with Pride and WEC and Strikeforce. But as far as Bellator is concerned, he's a Hall of Famer at Bellator, and he's definitely one of their best current fighters right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, we talk about, like, certain fighters like Michael Chandler leaving Bellator, right? And Patricio Pitbull being over there wanting to keep them. Douglas Lima is one of those guys that when you think of Bellator, you think of guys like the ones I just mentioned and Douglas Lima. But Douglas Lima's in a situation here where I think this is a very pivotal fight for him. I think he needs to win. I think he needs to look really good for us to still have him sort of up on that pedestal where we're still talking about, what if he went to the UFC and faced that kind of talent? Where does he stand? You know, is he just really good in Bellator, or is he a great welterweight overall? I think a lot of us believe he's a great welterweight, but guys like Kamaru Usman have just upped that bar so much. Colby Covington, those types of fighters. I want to know if Douglas Lima is the type of fighter that would be able to contend with those types of fighters. And I think tonight's a very, very big fight in order to figure that out.
Well, look, full disclosure, when the rankings being compiled over at USA Today, Sports, and MMA Junkie, the road to number three is a lot tougher when you're not in the UFC. And it's because you're not fighting fighters that are ranked ahead of you too often. You know, it really takes a while to put spots that are well earned. And I think he definitely could compete. I mean, yeah, you said Michael Chandler straight up. Anthony Pettis, when he was at WEC, people used to wonder, how would the WEC lightweights do in the UFC? Well, guess what? He won the title. So did Benson Henderson. So now we know. You know, now we're aware of how those lightweights would do. Cowboy Cerrone was a title contender for a few years, a ranked fighter in the top 10, made it up to top five. So we knew that was true. Strikeforce, how would those guys do? Because Melendez and Thompson are giving us some great fights, but how would they do in the UFC? Well, Melendez lost a split decision to Benson Henderson when he came over. So he almost became champion. You know, Josh Thompson made it to a title contender fight against Anthony Pettis, if I'm not mistaken. But then I think Pettis got injured, and the fight fell through, and then I forgot what they were able to put together after that. But he made it to title contender. And that was Thompson's second time in the UFC, by the way. And then, of course, with Bellator, they sent over – well, he came over as a free agent, Eddie Alvarez. He won the title. And then Michael Chandler was this close to winning the title. Get it out of your mind, folks, that fighters in other leagues can't compete in the UFC. That's been happening for years. I can present a case at welterweight, Tyron Woodley. I could Nick Diaz was a title contender. Carlos Condit was a WEC champ. He was an interim champ in the UFC. You know, we can present it at middleweight if you want. Luke Rockhold. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, this, seriously, we can do it almost probably every division. So that's not even up for debate. And even that even goes for you noobs. Just check the history books. We don't have time to spend on a noob right now that goes, fuck no, UFC, man, all the way. Yeah, UFC's awesome. Don't get me wrong. But these fighters are outside of the UFC. There are some that are just as good, quality fighters. Douglas Lima is one of them. You want to tune in to Douglas Lima against Yaroslav Amosov.
I would almost argue that there was a point, now looking back, that you could almost argue, could the UFC lightweights contend with the WEC lightweights? When you look at the impact that those guys had, it's pretty massive.
At the time, I guess you were, let me see, Penn, Edgar, and Benson had already come over. So I guess it was Penn and Edgar. Mm-hmm. I guess Shirk before him, you know, the overlap. And then before that, Shirk was the first champ because not the first, but first when they brought it back. So, yeah, could those guys, how would they have done against the WEC guys? I mean, we don't know. I mean, you know, you could honestly send those three to the WEC and they can come back 3-0, 2-1, 1-2. I don't know about 0-3, to be honest. I don't know if they go 0-3. If you send over Shirk, Penn, and Edgar. I don't know, man. Let's leave 0-3 alone. Mm-hmm. I'm even thinking I maybe should take back 2-3, but I don't know if they'd go 3-0. I don't know if they would sweep. And I guess Pettis and Henderson prove that, you know.
You know, it's a real tough argument. I think we did it one time. I don't know if we did it on another show or on our show, but it was who had the bigger impact on the UFC, Strikeforce or the WEC? That one's tough.
Strikeforce goes to Ronda.
Yeah, you got guys like Cormier, Rockhold. But then think about what the WEC did and people that they brought. And they still have a ton of fighters still going.
Well, it's close. It's neck and neck.
Aldo, Faber, Pettis, Bendo. I mean, there's a lot. Cerrone.
I think those guys basically face off against Cormier, Rockhold, Woodley, you know, that bunch. Henderson, Fabricio, they came back from Strikeforce, if you want to look at it that way. But no matter what, like, Ronda leading the way, and just she brought a lot, man. She basically carried women's MMA on her shoulders. And I think that would be the tiebreaker. But throw in Pride? I don't know.
Rampage.
You could argue for nights, for days and nights on that one. Paul Daly, who has not retired and still isn't sure if he'll retire, he's also on the card. Aaron Pico's on the card as well. In 10 minutes or so, Demetrius Johnson will join us, former UFC flyweight champ, current one championship flyweight contender. All right, let's turn the page. Quick reminder, we're going to be hosting a UFC watch-along over at MMA Junkie. So if you just go to our page on MMA Junkie, the front page, you'll see links to the page that we will be on, doing what we used to normally do at Sportscaster. Sportscaster is still part of our watch-alongs. It's just that now we say that they're available on MMA Junkie. They're powered by the team over at Sportscaster, now known as Panda. But they don't want to be mentioned. It just goes and I on MMA Junkie. I just want you to know that we have a great relationship with them, and we're glad that they helped us carve this thing out, you know, on a monthly basis for us to be with you guys during pay-per-views. So how it works is at 8 p.m. Eastern, we're going in an hour earlier now, 5 p.m. Pacific, we will be with you guys, watching the fights with you guys. Now, the first four fights, we're going to watch them together because everyone's got ESPN, right? But then you got a decision to make whether you're getting the pay-per-view or not. This one's stacked. I'd get it. But if you don't, you can watch along with us. We'll tell you exactly what's happening as fans. We go from media guys to fans, start cracking open beers. We start eating some pizza. And trust me, some gambling will be going on. I think there's going to be a prominent BetMGM presence this weekend. So, and going throughout. That's a relationship that USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie have with BetMGM. But I believe now with the way things are working with the watch along and what you'll be able to view, the viewing experience, think you're gonna dig it. So just be patient with us. This will be our first week, but you know me, I'll be laying out some parlays. I'm gonna have my stuff ready to go, And I can't wait to hang out with you guys on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Goes, what's the cuisine of choice for Saturday?
Man, I was thinking we're going to Texas Day Brazil today. So definitely steaks are probably out, right? I would imagine at that point. So now I'm thinking Chipotle?
We could do Chipotle or we could do Round Table.
Yeah, we could do that. We're going to be short a man, though, or a woman, because Laura has a work event. So whatever we get, it's going to have to be something we can bring up ourselves and all that.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, we have definitely have some time to figure that out. It's in 2 days, our UFC 263 watch along here on MMA Junkie. Join us then, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. More reminders towards the end of the show. Demetrius Johnson will join us in 10 minutes here on our live show, which we do every Monday and Thursday here on MMA Junkie. So definitely tune in. Now let's talk about UFC 263, Israel Adesanya against Marvin Vettori. Adesanya seems, from what I've been able to tell, I've seen some interviews on ESPN, and I've seen the countdown. He seems composed, stoic, still got a little bit of swag, but definitely I think that loss to Blachowicz just kind of slowed things down a little bit. In other words, he's still in his Lamborghini or Ferrari or whatever he's got. He's still wearing his shades. He's still got his chains. He's still a badass. It's just that he's not driving 150 on the freeway anymore. He's like, you know, let me slow down. Let me get to about 120, 100. Let me enjoy this. But I also don't want to be some hot dog. And next thing you know, you got cops and helicopters chasing me. Let me, you know, let me just chill a little bit for a while. And I think it's just the loss. The loss definitely exposed a little bit of a weakness, if we'll call it that, because he did give up at least 20 pounds to Jan Blachowicz, and that can make a difference. You know, Blachowicz had some nice takedowns, but one of them looked to me like a tackle in football, like a somebody coming up the middle and just tackling the quarterback, you know? Does Marvin Vettori have the ability to take a fighter down? Yeah. Keep him down? Yeah. Ground and pound? Yeah. But he's not as big as Jan Blachowicz. He also doesn't have I know he can knock you out, but I don't think he has the threat is as big as what Blachowicz is, which had to be sitting in Izzy's mind every time they got into closed court. It'll be a different type of fight to unpack, but he's been in there with him. He didn't finish him. And I'm just noticing that he's retaining some of the swag, but he's also not going over the top. How do you read him? What's so funny?
I'm laughing because I think I know exactly what you mean, that takedown. You know, it looked like he should have been wearing a yellow Staff Pro jacket when he did it, because it reminded me of when somebody runs on the field or on the court, you know, and then he just one of those Staff Pro guys just comes and tries to tackle him. That's what it looked like. I think I know which one you're talking about. That's why I was laughing. But with Israel Adesanya, I really like Israel Adesanya because I like his smack talk game in the sense that when he says everything he says, I feel like he honestly believes it. And I feel like there's a lot of fighters that, even great fighters, that say things that they don't truly believe. And you can feel it. It just feels fabricated. Everything Israel Adesanya says, I truly believe that he believes it. And I like him. I picked against him in this fight. And it's not because I don't think he's a great fighter. I do think he's a great fighter. But I think Marvin Vettori can maybe capitalize a little bit on some of the holes that were exposed by Blachowicz. It's weird to call them holes just because Israel Adesanya was going up in weight. And sometimes, no matter how well-rounded of a fighter you are, size does matter. So it could be that. But I feel like Marvin Vettori could maybe expose some of those things. So I took him. But I will tell you this. If Israel Adesanya wins that fight, I would probably never pick against him ever again, because I don't know that anybody really will be able to. Because he keeps getting better, too, is the problem. So this fight, really, really... I'm really, really looking forward to this one. And it's so weird because the co-main event's so awesome too, but this one I'm really looking forward to.
Well, Israel said something important in one of the countdowns, and he said he had made a minor adjustment, and he pointed towards conditioning, and that goes to the second part of the holes that I saw. One of them was just in the later rounds, his takedown defense just wasn't what, you know, what it was, obviously, what I've seen over the years. I remember when we met him as a kickboxer, or a world champion kickboxer. Hey, how's your takedown defense? Don't worry, I'm working on it. Well, he started proving it to us that he wasn't an easy guy to take down. And but I think when I heard that, I was like, yeah, I could see a few of those takedowns possibly coming from his conditioning being not what it normally is. And he just didn't have the energy to fight off that bull that's Blachowicz, you know. When you start doing that, you start taking away from Blachowicz's win. So I'll stop there. But the fact is, Blachowicz got him down and kept him down. And that's the other part, is his ability to get up. Now, again, Vettori won't be as big of a guy as Blachowicz on fight night. Can he keep him there? I don't know, you know. So I think the further the fight goes, Vettori's gone five rounds, and he's full of confidence. He's not scared of Israel Adesanya. He's already felt him once. But let's not forget, man, Adesanya is a sniper. You know, right. Whitaker and Costa really should have been probably the two toughest fights. Like, when you look at who he's beaten, you know, Brunson was quick too, but Gastelum, Romero, you know, a few of the ones, well, I guess Romero, I don't know how to judge Romero, because, you know, it's probably one of the most terrifying humans on earth. But yet at the same time, there wasn't much going on. So, but going back to Costa, who was undefeated, and Whitaker, who's what, 13-1 or 12-1 as a middleweight, you know, you should have went, ooh, that should have been a tough night. What? He got rid of him that quick? I think one was in the second, Whitaker. Costa was in the first. Like, what the hell? Well, because Israel's a badass too. So this thing could end quick, or it can go the distance. If it starts going the distance, I would start to think that Vettori is live, you know. This fight is getting a little bit tighter, but I see it more as a sprint race where Adesanya is just the faster guy and has a head start, and we'll see if Vettori can somehow reel him in and turn it into more of a marathon rather than a sprint. Davis, go ahead.
I was just going to say another thing about Marvin Vettori is you got to give that dude his props, because his road was pretty long. And everything that he said he was going to do, he ended up doing. He took a pretty long road to get there. I don't know that he had the push that the UFC gives other fighters. So for him to be in this situation is very, very commendable. And win, lose, or draw, I still feel like this last year has probably upped his profile a lot. And I think they need to focus more on that story of, you know, being an Italian and how many people are actually behind him. You know, you see guys like Francis Ngannou, when he comes home, how many people are actually behind him. I think that crowd, that Italian fan base, is a lot bigger than what we get to see on TV.
Well, if you recall, about a year ago, no, about 12, 14 months ago, he was in Jacksonville and he was yelling at Carl Roberson. Remember, he was out of his mind because the fight wasn't going to happen. He was really, really pissed. And they had to keep, I think it was Benil Dariush who was trying to calm him down. You know, he was really, really frustrated the way things were playing out. Of course, a couple months later, he gets to run it with Carl Roberson, wins that fight. He got, let me see, Kevin Holland was, Hermanson was the one after that. And then Kevin Holland, you know, that's two different types of fighters. You have a really good grappler in Jack Hermanson and a really good striker in Kevin Holland, you know, and he was able to not only best both guys who have different types of strengths, but he was also able to go championship rounds with both guys, 25 minutes in Hermanson and in Holland. So you got to tip your hat to, you know, Vettori being able to keep it together, win his fights, be relevant. You know, he had that split decision he could always hang on to with Israel Adesanya. So I was right there. I thought I won, you know, and the UFC got behind that push. So good for that. Good for him. You know, he's a little lucky that the timing as well on Robert Whittaker's wins were not jiving with how Adesanya was, you know, when he was fighting. And I always tell fighters, fight when the champion's fighting so your timelines are even. But they were always off a couple months. I don't want to take away anything from Vettori's chances, but Dana White's been very clear. Those should have been Whittaker's at the time, but he couldn't go. So we started looking to other names. So anyway, we'll get back to some of that talk in just a sec. Now we're joined by one of the greatest to ever do it, Demetrius Johnson, a.k.a. Mighty Mouse, former UFC bantamweight contender, former UFC flyweight champion, former ONE Championship Grand Prix champion, and now a ONE Championship contender. Demetrius Johnson here on MMA Junkie Radio. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. Enjoying my life.
I beg your pardon?
I said I'm enjoying my life.
Oh, I thought you said your laugh. I was like, what's so funny? His laugh. Okay. His life. First of all, that's a pretty cool whip you got. What are you driving?
This is my wife's truck. This is a F-150 Roush package.
Wow. What is that? That's too fancy for me. Who makes that?
It's Ford, and then basically you ship it out. Well, you don't ship it out. The Ford dealership ships it out to the Roush factory. And from the story I've been told, Jack Roush was a racer, I believe, and he had like one of the fastest cars. So they kind of send it out to the Roush dealership, and it gives it all new custom look to it. I mean, you got the American flag right here, got the diamond seat. I mean, it's just good. And there's my daughter, so, and it's kind of like
look
a
at all the windows. Look yeah, at all the like dope, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of like a luxury truck, but it has the versatility. You know, we can haul the dirt bikes and go four-wheeling if we want, which we don't go four-wheeling. We like to ride dirt bikes.
And with all the rain that it does in Washington, it's a big FU rain, right? Because it's coming down, but you're protected by all those cool windows.
You know what? Like, as I get older, I realize that if I didn't have my gym up here and if my friends, if anyone here, I would be ready to move to, like, Arizona. We're actually buying a vacation home in Arizona, but we're building one. But I am so sick of the rain. It's like, I love it, but I'm also sick of it.
You know, Arizona gets to like 130 in the summer. You cool with that?
I mean, you know, I haven't been to hell before, but I'm sure I get used to it.
You've definitely made people feel like they've been in hell with all the ass whooping you've been doing over the years. That's for sure. So maybe some of your opponents can tell you what hell's like. Demetrius, how are you doing? You know, we've covered you for the last 15 years. I think I can only remember two times going, well, that one didn't go as planned. I mean, the rest of the time, it's like, hell of a win, pal.
Yeah, everything's great, man. Obviously, we came up short in the last one. But, you know, back home, enjoying life. And like you said, you know, I've been in the game for 15 years. And I think, you know, does it suck it happen? Absolutely. Am I going to change my whole outlook on life or mixed martial arts or my career? Absolutely not. So we're back home. Like I said, hang out with the kids. We're going to go train tonight, doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and kickboxing. And, yeah, life goes on.
I imagine you guys are going to run it back. And so my question is, did you know immediately, without the obvious, but did you know immediately, like, okay, I got this. I know where I can correct the errors. Or is this guy going to be a difficult puzzle to solve for you?
I think everybody's a difficult puzzle to solve, to be honest with you. Like every fight I've ever done, from the Joseph to the McCall to the Kyoji, I mean, the list just goes on. Wilson Hayes, even the rematch with John Dodson, it's always going to be a different fight, right? And I felt like after I sat down and watched the fight, I felt like it was just that blip of time. And, you know, I've sat down with my coach. Shit, I sat down with Eddie Alvarez and talked to him about it. And he was like, dude, I mean, if you do, it's you're damned if you do, you do if you don't, right? I don't know what the hell the saying is, but I felt it was just that one blip of time when uppercut came, I got clipped, and then I stuck my arm in there. It gave him the perfect opportunity to land that knee to me on as I was trying to get back up. So, you know, like I said, it happened, and I'm sure when I work my way back up to a title shot, then, you know, we'll proceed the fight. Not differently, you know, like I said, it was just that one blip. Maybe I was too aggressive. Maybe I should have let him cross distance. I mean, you can sit down and try to cut an apple, you know, so many different ways. Fight's a fight.
You know, I was going to ask you this question. I swear I'm not asking it just because your family's around, yeah. But it does help that they're around because I've always told you this. I always feel like you're very good at taking one hat off and putting the other one on. And I wanted to ask you, as far as family goes, how much has that helped being a father, being a husband in this situation versus other losses that you've had before in the past? Is he there?
No, he froze. Okay, I'll have to wait for a reconnect.
Yeah.
And when he does, we'll continue.
Oh, okay. He's back.
Sorry about that. My daughter dropped her Brachiosaurus. I need to grab it. 1 second. Yeah.
Okay.
There you go, sweetie. There you go. Don't drop him again, please. Thank you. So the question was how different it is from taking a loss when you have no children or a family or a wife or kid.
Maybe I'll have better coverage in Arizona.
I was thinking about we've been interviewing him a long time,
yeah.
But how old we are, because when you think about how our conversation started, we talked about the weather, which is definitely, that's old guy territory right there.
Well, I didn't start with that, but I just thought it was like the coolest that he has these moon roofs or whatever they're called. Never know that there's a sunroof and a moon roof, but you know, basically, you know, they live in a state where there's a lot of rain, but I think it's got to be pretty cool in a way. Like, there's a lot of people that actually enjoy the rain, you know, and I like it. I don't like it every day, but I think if I was in one of those cars, I think it'd actually be pretty cool. I've always gotten a kick out of those cars that got, you know, all these moon roofs like that.
It can't be fun in Arizona though, right? Yeah. Wouldn't that make it hotter? All right, I think he's back.
We'll have to tint the windows.
Okay. Yeah, I remember the question because I have good memory.
You remember? I barely remember it, and I asked it.
So when I had my first loss against Brad Pickett, I was devastated because it was the first time I experienced that in a professional career, in a professional atmosphere. And, you know, it's just me and my wife. Well, my girlfriend at the time, but she's my wife now. Now, if I didn't have children and married, I would be absolutely bored in mixed martial arts. I just feel I'd be bored because there's only so much you can, but I love being busy. Like, I spent probably 4 or 5 hours last night at the track with my son as he was racing. Today, I got to clean his bike, got to change his oil, got to tighten his chain. I got to make sure his tires are good for the race Friday night. So, I mean, it's just a whole night and day. I mean, I can't tell a difference when I win and I lose nowadays.
Well, you know, I think early on when we would interview you, we could see the little classroom in the background, right? It was towards the beginning of the pandemic, and everybody's jobs kind of shifted a little bit of what we all had to do, whether your parents or not. Looking back now at that time period, how did the pandemic affect you as a fighter looking back?
I mean, as a fighter, it just let my body rest and get fresh, to be honest with you. Mindset-wise, you know, it sucked because I'm young and that's how I make my money and I want to be active and fight. But, you know, it is what it is. I can't predict what happens with, you know, viruses and if a country's going to shut down or open up. I mean, everybody was, I think every athlete, not just mixed martial arts, but football, NBA, NHL, everybody was struggling. But, you know, I found positivity in it. I could spend a lot more time with my family and be able to see my kids learn how to read and grow. I mean, that's stuff I'm not going to be able to get back.
So are you part of a pit crew now for your son? Like, he's racing bikes and you're the crew chief?
I'm the crew chief until somebody else, if he ever makes it to that point in his life where he's actually can be professional. But, you know, the whole time he's out there, if I'm not riding, then I'm out there make sure he's got what he needs to be successful on the track.
I've seen some of these races. I'm talking more about NASCAR where sometimes they get into it. I would not want to be the crew chief on the other side going, what? I got his bet. Oh, no, we got no problems. Go ahead and cut us off all you want.
You know, the thing I love about this community of dirt biking, and I just got into it since December, everybody's been absolutely amazing and friendly. Like, that's one thing I would say I love about doing this so far. When I come to the track, you know, kids are nice to my son. They fist bump each other. And then if somebody falls, another parent will come help that kid up. So I'm absolutely blown away with the community. I never thought it would be like this. Like, I think some are, they're intimidating, but which this was for me, because I'm like, I have no friends that ride. We have our dirt bikes, but parkour. He's like, Dad, come for my dirt bikes. I'm like, I gotta go to work. Definitely been up there to be inviting.
All right, Demetrius, can you still hear us? Uh-oh. I feel like he's still there.
I'm still here.
There he is. Okay. Demetrius, so let's wrap up with this. Are you guys going to run it back? Have you already heard that? Is that your preference?
No, I think Chachri, and it's always been my preference in all my careers, even when I beat people and they've lost to me. I have no problem working my way back up to title shot, right? There's guys you want to who's gonna fight for fight one streak in one championship. I think he is next in line for the title shot. And for me, I've been here before. I might give another gentleman a chance to get it. But if they offer it to me, then you know I'll take it. So we'll see what I heard anything.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess if you're good with it, then fine. But I think you're pretty special, man, in this sport. If you're ever going to run something back with what you've done, you're the guy that deserves it. That's my choice as a fan, you know. But at the same time, I guess that's pretty commendable of you to help the division grow too.
Absolutely. And I've never been trying to be the – what's it called? The popular kid. Damn, you ain't got that dog shut up yet? You train that dog? Damn. Sorry, my dog don't bark. I tell her not to bark anymore.
Hey, Demetrius, can you still see the screen? Can you still see the screen?
Yeah, I can see you guys.
Man, I really wanted to rock that, all right? But the one problem I have with one championship gear is their idea of a 2XL, it ain't right. Like, I tried to put this on and look like a raft guard on me. So I show it to you because I did get it. I would have loved to rock it. Of course, I got some DJ stuff back here. There's an MMA bobblehead there. But talk to them over at One Championship. Say the big guys in North America, give them the proper 2XL. But yeah, I love this shirt, man.
I appreciate that, and I'll let them know. And it's the same thing for me, man. So I actually kind of like it because when I get a small, it's like if I buy an adult small here in America, it's like down to my knees. But if I buy a small, small in Asia, it's like the perfect fitting for me. So I feel your struggle.
All right. Well, listen, we'll let you get back to family time. Thanks for always squeezing us in. And whatever the fight is, you know we're ready to cover it. You're one of the greatest to ever do it in our sport. It's a pleasure covering you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a wonderful day. We got 2 days, so enjoy the weekend, though.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, and good luck to his son in a dirt bike race. That's pretty cool for him to be involved in something like that. You see how into it he was? He wants to clean the chain and mm-hmm. prep the bike. He's all in on his kids.
Yeah, no, he's a good dad. That's very cool. When you think about like all the sports growing up, I don't know, in our life really dirt biking didn't really pop up, but I think if it had, or if it was an option, I think I probably would have tried it. I like that type of stuff.
You learn something every day, goes. So let me tell you something. Years ago, I was probably about 6 or 7. Dad bought me a motorcycle. Dad had gone on his little run where he wanted to get a motorcycle, and he did. I think he got himself a Honda or a Yamasaki. I can't remember. And he got me one. But it was definitely too big. Mom was definitely against it. But he's kind of a spontaneous guy, kind of like me. Sometimes I'll just do something too. And I think when we got home, he realized that bike was too big. So it was one of those, this will sound believable when it comes to dad, but, you know, like the guy probably told him, you know, we probably got a little bit of a smaller bike to start your son off. But don't have one in stock. We got this one and he can grow into it. But you know how dad can be spontaneous and be talked into stuff. So he goes, give it to me, you know? And that's what he did. And when we got it home, it was just, it was big, dude. Like, seriously, I had learned how to ride a bike probably maybe at five, at six, I was already going to be on this. And this thing was just propped up a little bit. It wasn't like one of those little scooters that you see the Shriners at a parade or something like that. It was up there, you know? And so when we got home, I think reality set in. And so he actually, I think, sold it to Uncle Chewy, who I believe just never paid. I don't want to throw him under the bus, but I think it was just one of those situations because when I talked to mom, she kind of makes this face like, oh, yeah, he sold it to him. But we just needed to get rid of it. And so Uncle Chewy, who was my dad's cousin, but much younger, he was probably a teenager. It was probably perfect for him. If I would have been 13, okay, let's give it a run. I don't know if I would have loved it or not, because I'll tell you this much, and I don't think my dad minds telling me the story. My dad rode his bike. He liked it, but then he took one spill, and you don't know how fast he came back and said, I'm selling it. That's it. He wanted nothing to do with it. It gave him a scare. Back then, wearing helmets wasn't the law, so I don't even think he had one on that day. And he just had himself a scare, and so it was over. His love for bikes was over, and that other bike had gone. Now, that said, we weren't about to get into dirt racing or anything, but
well, we got ATCs after that. Remember that?
Yeah, those were fun.
Yeah, those were a lot of fun. Well, one time I took a spill at the park, but other than that, it's fun.
With that kid behind you, Renee, was that his name?
No, his name was John.
John.
He didn't lean into the turn, so he flipped. And I mean, it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't fun, I'll tell you that.
Fast.
Yeah.
Fast, so crashing on that deal would not have been fun for sure. And I don't think back in the day we weren't wearing helmets there either, huh?
No,
kids on bikes weren't wearing helmets either. Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame now. For the good, you know? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so when you see a guy with a Harley and he's wearing his hat, like the guys on Harleys were the last to resist. They did not want to do it. They were taking tickets, and then they came up with that look. I don't know what you call that look. It's, you know, the black one. And it kind of rounded it off and kind of made it look cool. But I remember the Harley guys were very resistant. I remember in the late 80s, we still weren't really wearing seatbelts consistently. It took a while. So, yeah, man, it's a whole different ballgame now. You know, like literally what kids grow up with now, there's way more thought into what they consume, what they eat,
their
safety and things like that. And, you know, if you think about it, same thing, you could almost apply it to you can probably apply it to anything. And let's go back to martial arts, mixed martial arts. Think about the first couple of UFCs. Anything goes. There's a fight. Look up, if you all have the UFC Fight Pass, enjoy it. Look up Keith Hackney versus Joe Son and Joe Son is getting punched in the nuts by Keith Hackney. I mean, directly in the nuts. Just, you know, nonstop. Like, that wouldn't happen today. Obviously, you see sometimes where there's a kick, you know, sometimes the fighters will call their own timeout. They may take 5 minutes. They may not even, you know, come back. It may be a no contest. Mm-hmm. Or whatever. Back then, pretty much anything went as far as strategy. I mean, remember the headbutts from Mark Coleman? Boom, boom.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, man. So
do you remember,
you can apply it to mixed martial arts, too.
Do you remember my friend Jeff that lived kind of close by us? His brother Joey. Jeff and Joey. And okay, we had a conversation last week about kids and the games we would play and all that. And one thing that stood out was, do you remember drinking from the water hose?
Yeah.
So he was saying, like, we would just do that all the time with no problem whatsoever. He goes, right. My kids If I tried to get them to do that, they would probably think I'm like Hannibal Lecter or something disgusting. But he goes, even if I went the next step where I said, here, drink some water from the tap, they'd still probably give him Frank Mir face. He goes, it's like water bottle or nothing. And we didn't grow up with water bottles. If we wanted to take water on the road, we had to fill up a jug or one of them little like Tour de France things and take that with us. The way we grew up was way, way different than the way kids are growing up today.
I remember our Uncle Tito, we were in Peru, and I think we were, you know, in Peru, Goz and I could not drink from a faucet or much less a water hose. We definitely have to get water, bottled waters over there. And I remember Uncle Tito was drinking from a hose, you know. This was probably like in 2005. So we were definitely all drinking bottled water now by then. But I can't sit there and go, what the hell are you doing? I had done that 20 years prior. But what I couldn't imagine was, A, doing it again in the United States, and B, definitely not overseas. I can't imagine what would have happened to my stomach. But he goes, no, look. And he was able to do it, you know, no problem. Still, and that, like I said, I think he would still probably do it. He says the water's pretty clean over there. Who knows? But
do you remember jumping off the roof? So yes. You would take a ladder to get up. Like if a ball got hit up there, you would take a ladder to get up. But usually you just say, forget the ladder. You just jump down. But you would not see that today at all. No way.
I probably could do it till about, we'll say, age 7 or 8. I think the scariest thing was just being on the roof. But jumping off, no problem. And then around age 10 or 12, I don't remember. I jumped and I just remember going, oh, my ankles hurt and my balls hurt. And I was like, whoa, okay, no, can't do that again. So then what I would do is I would hang off the roof and then just let go. That wasn't as bad as jumping from the roof. But I could jump from the roof before, but it had to be when you were at the young kid stage, because once you, you know, you started, well, back then I played a lot of sports, so some of the little wear and tear starts to add up. You know, you could do that. That's why I kind of have a lot of respect, even though I don't consider it a sport. I kind of get a kick out of watching parkour.
Yeah, but I get that weird feeling, you know, like when you're watching those Russian guys walking on top of the buildings and stuff.
Oh, that's horrific.
I always feel like something's going to happen, so I'm not too comfortable.
Something has happened. Oh, yeah, some of them have died.
Yeah.
The most recent one was probably 2 years ago. Somebody took Tuso, sent it to me. I click it, and it's basically, I think it was a guy that used to do pull-ups, you know, on skyscrapers. He would sneak in, get to the top, and then do pull-ups. And on one particular time, he just, I get nervous talking about it. He was doing it, and then he kind of like sat there and kind of like shook it off, kind of like, okay, I've been here before. Let me just kind of like regrip and then do it again, but his body just didn't have it. And I think he realized, okay, you know, I'm in panic. But I think what happened was he probably must have set up the camera himself, because I think at some point you're like, I ain't got it, right? Give me a hand if there's someone else filming. So he must have set up the camera, but all you could see is him just kind of like gripping and trying, and he couldn't. And then I think he was just realizing, like, this is it, you know, and you see it, man, it's horrible. So something has happened, trust me.
Wow.
The worst, think about how crazy that is to walk on those beams up there. Just walking up there. It gets windy up there. The nerves of steel you got to have. But have you ever seen those guys? What are they called? Not the Segways, but what are those things called that you stand on that you control with just, they're just at your feet. It's like a skateboard, but horizontal. What's that?
Yeah.
Segway is the one that you can control, right? You see people like police in the walls.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're called.
This thing is just the feet. I've seen some guy do that, man, up there. And I'm like, dude, seriously. At least with walking, you have a little bit of balance. But with that other thing, like one small, because you're going kind of going up and back, you're jerking forward and backward. And oh my God. Demetrius Johnson just texted me and he says, you got it, Goz?
Yeah. So I think we might have to do that.
We can do it again. Does he mean now or does he mean like just in the future?
I thought he meant like in the future, like tomorrow or, you know, later today or something.
All right. Well, that's kind of him to shoot us a message. And we'll definitely catch up with him soon. But you can tell he's in good spirits. He's been able to shake off the loss. Fine. I mean, look, he's Demetrius Johnson, for crying out loud. He's one of the greatest to ever do it, regardless of what happened that night. You know, everything he was just doing was just cementing it. But he's had a brilliant career. And hats off to Adriano Moraes for that win. I hope they run it back. I wanted to tell this to Christian Lee. Folks, we interviewed Christian Lee yesterday. And you can catch our interviews in full, the one we don't do on Junkie Radio, over at youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. And he doesn't want to give Eddie Alvarez a shot. Eddie Alvarez says, I should get a shot. Eddie Alvarez feels like that fight that went to a no contest, that he should have just won that because he was on his way to winning it. Then he took a loss in a decision. But I think what he's saying is, I'm Eddie Alvarez still, you know what I mean? Like, okay, you know, I didn't go 3-0 or 4-0, but I'm Eddie Alvarez, and this would be good for the division. And those, I'm so against that traditionally. I really love number one contenders, the fight champions. But when I looked at it, I was like, you know what? He may have a point, and this might benefit Christian Lee too. It would help the division. It would help the promotion. It would help Christian Lee as well as it would help Eddie Alvarez. But one championship is just getting that division going, and it could use something like this. And that's why it kind of hurts for PFL, for Anthony Pettis, to not kind of be involved going forward. Even if he comes back and wins, and if he doesn't qualify, it'll kind of suck because he'll help carry that division and he'll help the promotion as well. There is some benefits to, like, I guess we call them like legacy type fights. They're not coming in with a win streak. They're not the number one contender, but they're pretty damn good still. And they've been very, very good over the years. And sometimes you just go, yeah, I need that fight to solidify me, you know? So you can see Christian Lee kind of giving us that opening and like, hey, look, if the fans want it, I'm in, but I just don't think he deserves it. So I think he's playing it right. He didn't in any way look scared. But I don't know. I think the same might help out Adriano Moraes too.
Yeah. Now, I understand what you're saying. It is one of those weird scenarios. I could see how it could benefit Christian Lee just because he can be taken even more serious. You know, when people see that that's a skin on his wall, it'll help his career as well. So it's one of those weird scenarios where it kind of does work, but I understand if they don't go that route.
Hell, that might almost be why Leon Edwards took Nate Diaz. Leon Edwards should not be fighting Nate Diaz. He should either be fighting for the title, run it back with Bilal, or someone else. But I think the UFC's made it painfully clear that it's going to be Covington versus Usman. And I guess Masvidal's out there, three-piece Minnesota, sure, you know, maybe that could happen. But when you get a chance to fight an Nate Diaz, you get a lot. There's a lot of benefit to it, you know, regardless if he's not ranked in that division or been an active fighter or anything else. That might have just been a smart play on Leon Edwards to stay busy, get a lot of eyeballs, and then continue his progression, you know, to one day he can meet the champ.
Mm-hmm.
That these fights do happen sometimes, and they're a little bit more common than we think, you know, behind the scenes. By the way, shout out to Gally from Toronto. It's called a hoverboard, what I was describing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think I almost said it too, but I thought that I might be wrong. All right, so Davison Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno. That's the co-main event tomorrow night. We talked a little bit about Vittori and Israel Adesanya before. Demetrius Johnson spot. I was shocked that goes with Vittori. You got him on staff picks, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've been saying it for a while.
Right? If he loses,
huh?
If he wins. You'll never go against Adesanya again if he wins?
No.
I said that like two or three times when it applied to Henry Cejudo, and I kept going against him. And he called me out on it in Anaheim, California. in a friendly way, but I mean, I thought I had a case. Okay. You're going against Demetrius Johnson. Like, that's one of the GOATs. And then the next one, he went against TJ Dillashaw, who was kind of starting to cement his spot as, you know, one of the top bantamweights ever. He's dropped to flyweight. I mean, and he's been, you know, he's knocking out Cody Garbrandt. I just thought, man, that might be too much for Cejudo, who just won a split decision over Demetrius. And then the last one was Marais. Maybe by then I should have learned my lesson, but that was – Marais was, like, on an incredible run, you know. And now Henry was moving up. Remember, TJ went down. Henry was now moving up. So it wasn't, like, three busters. Those three gangsters, you know. But I could see he kind of, like, smiled, but he kind of went, like, I watched those staff picks, bitch. I know what you did. Because he got it right. I forgot about one of them. I was like, I only did it two times. He goes, no, it was three, and then he named them all off. And I was like, oh, man, you got me. Anyway, Figueredo and Moreno, I took Moreno, but I definitely see how great Figueredo is. He's really, really tough to beat.
Mm-hmm. I ended up going with I think I did go with Brandon Moreno, but it's the more and more I think about it, it's going to be very, very difficult. The only thing that keeps me hopeful is Brandon does seem to get better with every fight. So maybe he can close that gap a little bit. But Figueiredo is just pretty solid, man, wherever a fight goes.
Yeah. I think Moreno learned a lot from going five rounds. I think if he can pressure him, the same goes for Vittori, then I think – rounds 3, 4, and 5 might be more of a benefit for him if he can out cardio him. But you got to he took some hard shots from Davison Figueiredo. You can't just say, oh, I took his best shot and that's it. Hell no, these are 4 ounce gloves, because if he connects in the right spot, you could go out, you know. Definitely have to get a little bit better on your stand up defense. And Davison Figueiredo is no slouch on the ground either. So we'll see. I'm riding with Mexico. This would be pretty cool for Mexico to have their first Mexican-born champion. And I think he'd be an outstanding representative for the country of Mexico. But, man, he's up against the beast in Davison Figueiredo. If we hadn't had such a bad communication here, I wanted to ask DJ what he thought of that fight, because it is a division that he ruled for so many years. He just never got to scrap with either one of them. Finally, Leon Edwards versus Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz is saying, win or lose, I want a title shot. Boy, that guy can be unrealistic at times. We get it, Nate. You're popular. You can sell tickets, and you deserve to get paid. I won't go against that. But you got to win the fight, at least, if we're going to entertain. Dana White's nutty. You can talk Dana White into certain things, but it's got to be coming off a win. You know, and I just don't know if he can beat Leon Edwards. Leon Edwards looked very smooth against Bilal Muhammad. If Leon Edwards' output would have dropped, and if he would have started the tire, and if Bilal would have got some hands going, then maybe I would have seen that tire turning. But I don't know. Leon Edwards looked good that night. So we'll see. You know, Bilal's actually on the same card, which is bizarre why they didn't match them up. He fights Damian Maia. Damian Maia has said, I think this is my last fight. I thought for sure it was his last fight. But he's saying, we'll see. Because I think what Damian Maia always wanted to do was retire in Brazil. But because of COVID, you know, he wanted to stay busy. He's 43 now. And maybe if he wins and feels good and looks good, then maybe that buys him some time if the UFC starts taking shows on the road. And they, you know, maybe he has that opportunity to retire in Brazil. But he's got his hands full with Bilal Muhammad, who keeps getting better and better. And I bet you Bilal learned a lot from the Leon Edwards fight, because a kickboxer with speed and accuracy and reach advantage, it was going to be a tough puzzle for Bilal to figure out, even if they fought a second time. So we'll see about that. But I'm going with Leon Edwards here.
Leon Edwards, same. It's just, you know, time off is not a good thing. And Leon's just, look what he's been able to do. Look at his record. You know, like, he doesn't lose very often. So I got him there. And then Damian Maia, I think you got to look at the fact that he's an older fighter who just took a long time off. And sometimes that'll rejuvenate you a little bit. and some of the aches and pains go away. So I think maybe that could be why Damian Maia is rethinking whether this will be his last one. I think the rest will probably be a good thing for him. And I think I'm going to – I picked him over Bilal.
Yeah. So on Saturday, Goz and I are going to host a watch-along. If you didn't catch the earlier part of the show, UFC 263 watch-along here on MMA Junkie. Just go to the front page and you'll have all the links to get to us. And we'll be tweeting them as well. So on our social media, you can follow us. I'm at MMA Junkie George, at MMA Junkie George. Goz is at The Goz, T-H-E-G-O-Z-E, on Instagram and Twitter. We'll be posting and retweeting all that so that you can join us on Saturday. We can watch fights together from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, 5 to 7 Pacific, again on ESPN. Everyone's got ESPN, right? And then once the pay-per-view comes by, you know, we can watch them. We can continue watching the fights together. We have a chat room there. We're going to be doing some gambling talk alongside BetMGM. And we'll be gambling as well. I know I will. I don't know if Goz has set some buckets aside, if he's going to be sprinkling anything on fights as well. And if you don't get the pay-per-view, then we'll be your eyes and ears. So hang with us on Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That's normally 9 p.m. start time Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, but we're going 1 hour earlier. We want to be with you for 9 fights, 4 prelims and 5 fights on the main card, including 2 title fights Saturday night. Tell your friends, please share that when you see it out there on social media, retweets. It always helps, and we definitely appreciate it when you do it. Before we thank Demetrius Johnson for his time, because he was our guest today, I did want to say I left out one thing, Goz, on Monday's show. You know that young lady, I probably can't get it right the way it's pronounced, Manon Fiorot, the French flyweight?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe how good she looked the first time I saw her fight, and now she's won her second fight. She defeated Tabitha Ricci, and since then, she's already taken – I guess she's already got one more fight lined up, but it's not till September. But man, I can't wait to see her progression because she's really, really exciting. She looks like she's got speed and power, and I think it'd be fun to watch her against the great Valentina Shevchenko one day. Now it's still early on. We got to see her progression. All right, you're fast, you got hands, you got size, but let's see what you're like against some of the tougher competition. You know, Valentina's been ruling that for a while. But, you know, rarely do you see someone make a splash like that. And I didn't get a chance to say that on Monday's show because Monday we talked about a few highlights here and there. But I think we had to move on, and I left that out. But so far she's made a pretty nice splash in the flyweight division.
She's been a little bit of a bulldozer, man. She's exciting. But, yeah, Valentina needs dance partners. And I know that fight would probably be really far away. But if Valentina keeps dispatching of people, it might not be as far away as we think.
Yeah, she's fighting Mayra Buena Silva on September 25th. There's a UFC fight night. So that's already set. You know, she won her fight. Boom, they already gave her another one. It's not right on the corner, but it's happening. She's 7-1 overall. She lost her first fight ever, and then she's won 7 straight. She lost to Leah McCourt. Who's a name that I'm familiar with. First of all, they fought over in Cage Warriors. Let me see. This was 2018. Yeah, but Leah's been fighting over at Bellator. So that's why I said I'm familiar with her name. All right, folks, that's our show for today. Now thank you to Demetrius Johnson for his time. He says he'll run it back with us. He knows that the broadcast was a little shaky there. So maybe when we get our maybe when they decide what the fight bookings will be over at 1, we can talk about it and cover it and hang with Mighty Mouse a bit. Maybe by then I'll lose a few pounds and I'll be able to rock that shirt. Goz, you can co-sign, right? 1 championship. Huh?
Some of their stuff is small and some of them aren't. It's weird. I don't know how to order from them. I think the only way you order from them is like this. Just praying.
I like this hat, though. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah. You know, have I ever told you DJ jacked me one time?
I think you could fit in this one, by the way.
Yeah.
What do you do? Why did he jack you?
I had a pair of one championship sweats that I really liked. And I went to order another one. And it just never showed up. So I asked, you know, what happened with this order? And they go, oh, Demetrius Johnson needed a pair. So we gave it to him. And I was like, what? And they just kind of go, my bad.
Hmm.
That,
but you ordered it. So did they resend?
I had to get something else.
Okay. Well, you'll have to get them back one day. All right, folks, we're out of here. Join us on Saturday for our UFC watch along, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Until then, go out there and be a champion.